How are you?
Mr. Dan Patrick, thanks so much for taking the time to join us on WTOP.
I hope I can deliver whatever needs to be delivered here. But thanks for the invitation here.
Oh, you've been delivering for years. which the post office isn't doing, but you're delivering.
Yeah.
So obviously, so our listeners know, we're here with the Dan Patrick of the Dan Patrick Show, who's launching. It's going to be coming to Peacock Monday, and it'll air weekdays from 9 a.m. to noon. Now, is this basically your Sirius XM show, the same show, but with Peacock replacing the YouTube for the simulcast?
Yes. Yeah. It's just a different TV partner. We graduated from YouTube to Peacock.
So you can, show your feathers and your colors a little more.
Something like that. Thank you.
Now, so do you, so all of our fans then that they already, they know the format and they love it. It's just a new way to watch it. But why are you excited to be on Peacock?
Well, I just think that this is the future of our business, whether it's going to be, how you stream your shows. I was on the front lines of CNN. I started there when CNN started. I was there in the early stages, the embryonic stages of ESPN, the early stages of doing a simulcast radio show on TV. And I think that's where we are with Peacock. And I haven't been wrong on the other ones, and I don't think I'm wrong on this. I just think that that's the future of entertainment and how you get it.
Awesome. So we're going to obviously run this piece pretty much right as you launch the show on Peacock. What guest do you have coming up on, let's say next week?
I have no idea. I'm on a need to know basis, but we just do it in accordance to what is the day's news. And if we throw in somebody who might be promoting a movie or if there's music or something like that, then we do that. But you just sort of do it day to day and say, all right, who's the newsmaker that makes the most sense there? And sometimes you have those home run guests. If Adam Sandler, Will Ferrell, they join you, or Jim Parsons from the Big Bang Theory. But, for the most part, we try to stay in our lane with what we do well and, throw in a few surprises.
Yeah, well, it doesn't matter who's joining you. You're your own bazinga. You're the star anyway. all right, but it is. I mean, it's a bizarre time, obviously. Needless to say, but to be doing a sports show with the virus going on. But what are your thoughts so far on how baseball's been handling it? I've been loving. I've fallen all in love with MLB even more than I even used to. I've rediscovered it. Do you think a lot of other people are? Because it's our first thing we can watch.
Yeah, I think so. As long as we don't get, I view it like Charlie Brown when Lucy says, you can trust me, I'm going to kick the football. And, she always pulls the football back. I just worry baseball has given us this. And then all of a sudden, do they take it away from us because of, COVID with what the Cardinals have done, the Marlins have done, some of the Cincinnati Reds have done. That's where you can bring down an entire sport by a couple of guys being foolish. The Cardinals have no room for error. There's no margin for error anymore. They have to be able to play all of these games in a certain amount of time. I don't know if they can do it, but baseball's just trying to get to the postseason. Baseball doesn't care about the regular season. Just if we can get there, if we're limping, if we're the fife and drum bugle corps, we want to get to the postseason. And if we get there, that's when we're going to make some money or make some money back. And we have 16 teams in the playoffs and we get a World Series champ. And then we get out of here, and then we try to regroup for next year. That's all baseball's trying to do. So there's almost like a game within a game going on the field, and then what happens off the field, and the risk rolling the dice that some of these guys are playing with right now.
Yeah, let's please get through the postseason. We need our October. It would be so great.
Yes, I agree.
What are your thoughts, though, on – do you have a preference on the cardboard cutouts in the stands or empty stands, piped-in audio, or no? What's the Dan Patrick take?
I vowed when I saw it I would not be critical because it's just like the bubble with the NBA. I was not going to criticize if there's no fans or lack of ambiance. I don't care. I'm fine with whatever they want to put in there, cardboard cutouts, if they want to do any other visuals in there, sound effects in there, I don't care. All I ask for is that we had sports coming back. So I can't go, now that they're back, now I'm going to complain about the way they look. I'm fine with this. This might be just a one-off. I do think some of these leagues are going to adopt some of the technology or some of the looks that they have right now. I think the NBA is going to adopt the play-in bubble. I think they're going to have that. I think they're going to do that coming up next season. And you know, the NBA is not going to start until February, probably, of next season. But you're going to see a lot of different innovations, at least attempts at innovations, and then maybe, you know, some of these leagues adopt them. But no complaints out of me whatsoever with any cardboard cutouts.
Yeah, the cutouts look a little weird, but I do like the piped-in audio. I do think it would be very dull without it. I actually kind of like Chart, but there's no one to say Chart. But anyway, well, before we move to the other sports, like you mentioned, one last localized, you know, because we're a DC station. What's your take on, you know, the defending champs, Nats, last in the division, and then also I'm an Orioles fan. Baltimore's right up the road. Santander's crushing it. The O's are looking good.
It's been a while since we've been able to say O's are looking good.
You know? Yeah, right.
But you know, if that's the way that they become good, if you have a 60-game schedule, then great. You know, I'm all for having the Orioles back at least being relevant, because there were times when I would watch, no one was at the game, and that pitching staff was horrible. Chris Davis was hitting as many home runs as I was. And this was a once great, proud organization. And then you have the Nationals, the Nats just down the road being great. That had to hurt even more. I love watching Scherzer. If you think about it, though, Jace, how many players do you tune in that you would actually tune in to see a baseball player?
Right.
Scherzer's one of them. Bryce Harper is one of them. Mike Trout is not tune-in factor. Best player in the game, not tune-in factor. Aaron Judge, tune-in factor. Garrett Cole, when he's on the mound, is tune-in factor. That's where if you know that they're going to be pitching or playing, that you would actually stop to watch or seek them out. And baseball has an identity crisis. You know, we get upset with Fernando Tatis Jr. because he has the audacity to hit a grand slam where his team is up by 7 runs in the 8th inning. And I go, okay, what is the unwritten rule of how many runs can you be up and still swing on a 3-0 pitch in the 8th inning? It's just silly.
I'm with you. Swing. We don't play to win the game.
We don't celebrate anything. Oh, he's trying to show up the pitcher. Baseball needs to remember, have some fun. They're the one sport that's a buzzkill. Nobody gets to have fun in baseball. Can't celebrate. Oh, if you do, I'm gonna throw a pitch at the next guy.
Right.
It's entertainment. Baseball forgot about the entertainment portion of the game.
Well, and let's say he takes that walk and doesn't swing at the 3-0 pitch, and then the other team comes back and they beat him. That you're kicking yourself. So, but you got to play to win the game, as Herm said.
Well, but you can't go up there and go, how do I politely make an out because we're up by 7 runs. In today's game, where all you do is try to hit home runs, how safe is a safe lead? And that's where, you know, these pitchers have got to grow up, you know, and stop being a baby. How dare you hit a 3-0 pitch? Okay, you're the one that gave up the other runs. Like, what role did you play? And you get paid to get me out. I get paid to get a hit. You know what? You didn't do your job, so now I have, you know, throw it. This is what they should do. The team in the field should just take a knee and then say, we give up. We surrender. There's a mercy rule. We can't come back. We're down 7 runs. If they want to do that, then fine. But this isn't Little League. This isn't T-ball. These are grown men.
Yeah, throw a better pitch if you don't want them to hit it out. That's what I say. All right, pivoting to football, we have that coming up here on the horizon. Hopefully, like you said, fingers crossed. But what storylines are you looking at? Is it Tom Brady on the move in Tampa with Gronk? Can the Chiefs repeat? Or, you know, what's your storylines?
Well, I think you start with Brady just because that's a new location. He's got some weapons. I thought that they were going to be a playoff team if Teddy Bridgewater went there. If Brady didn't go there and Teddy Bridgewater went there, I would have picked them to still make the playoffs. They have that much talent. They lost a lot of close games. And, of course, they had a quarterback who giveth and taketh away. Now you bring in a guy who doesn't make mistakes like that, and you got a good coach in Bruce Arians. You got weapons. You're in there with the Saints, but, you know, I expect Brady to be great this year, or at least the Buccaneers to be great. Brady only has to be good for the Bucs to be great. Is this Drew Brees' last year? And if so, is he able to finally get them back to another Super Bowl? what happens in New England is Cam Newton. Cam Newton makes him interesting. And so I'm excited because the Patriots are boring when you think about it. They're boring. Even when Brady was there, they're only exciting when they get to the playoffs because we want to see if they win or they lose in dramatic fashion. Cam makes them interesting, makes them relevant. Then you start with Kansas City. They spent all the money with Kelsey, Chris Jones, and Patrick Mahomes. It's hard to repeat in this league. You have to go back to 2003 Patriots. It's really hard to be able to do that. I wonder about the Niners making the playoffs, believe it or not, because they got a lot of injuries. I don't think they're sold on their quarterback, so I'm curious about that. I mean, I could go down. Is Lamar Jackson real? Like, is he – now you take the next step. Can he take another step here where he took a giant leap? He was Neil Armstrong last year. And I think if he wants weapons. That's why he wants Dez Bryant, Antonio Brown. He realizes, as all these quarterbacks do, it's rare when you go, boy, that guy's got too many weapons. Lamar knows that if I get some of these guys, then it could be different. You know, but they took the Titans for granted. You know, they were looking ahead. They didn't think the Titans could run the ball down their throat. And, you know, Lamar Jackson, if you want to be the elite quarterback or mentioned, you do it in the postseason. Regular season's fun. Postseason is where you become famous.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's so those are just some of the storylines that I have.
Yeah, postseason, that's how Mahomes did it. We'll see it. We'll see if the Ravens – you mentioned the Ravens, but also the other team in our area, the Washington football team.
Oh,
What was your reaction? And, you know, for years and years, decades, you've been – ingrained in your head to say, you know, with the R word.
Yeah,
and,
I know.
So now, you know, what's your take on the fact that they're changing it? Is Dan Snyder going to have a new culture with Ron Rivera? And you know, what do you think a new name should be?
Well, I joked about this prior to the announcement of the Washington football team. Because I said, why don't you just do it like soccer, like the Washington Football Club? And I just threw it out there on my show. I come in the next day. And my producer says, you know what the new name is, Washington football team? And I go, what's the nickname? No, they're the Washington football team. I go, oh, my God. So they're doing that. It's interesting how we move on in the media. Because remember, Dan Snyder was real hot topic there for a variety of reasons. What was going on in the office, the Washington Post story, what was going on with the nickname, you know, you fire some people. He's on his yacht somewhere in the south of France or wherever he was. And then we moved on from it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we kind of forgot about, well, wait a minute here. The minority owners want him out. So there's still a lot. It's really combustible with that. And I felt bad for Ron Rivera because we had him on our show. And I said, Ron, you've been there less than 6 months. You should not be the person who has to come out here and take all these bullets. You should not be taking the slings and arrows. It wasn't fair to him, but he's a classy guy, and he did it. And you can't have people keep apologizing for Dan Snyder. Dan Snyder has to apologize for Dan Snyder or sell this team. But you do have a little – you know, I got questions here. I don't know if Dwayne Haskins is a franchise quarterback. I don't know. And you got some weapons there. You got some help on the defensive side of the ball. And you're in that division where the Cowboys are going to be good. The Giants are better. You got you guys, and then you got Philadelphia. So it's tough sledding there to even get to 500. You know, and you guys played well at the end of last season. Haskins did. So I'm curious about that. I just felt bad for Ron Rivera. Hey, Ron, you just got in town. You probably don't know very many people's names. Could you meet with the media and tell them some nice things about us? And that's basically what he already became employee of the month, you know, by those things. But he was the one guy who got out in front, and I applauded him for it. I just felt bad for him.
Yeah, I mean, the question is really whether, you know, Dan Snyder can stay out of the way. I mean, he ruined the whole Schottenheimer. That was our best shot at it. And ran Shanahan out of town. The story goes on and on. But
well, the problem is these guys make the money to buy a team, but they're not smart enough to let people run the team. And that's where the great owners allow who they hire to do their jobs. When Daniel Snyder says, hey, we're taking Dwayne Haskins. Okay, how would you feel if you're Jay Gruden at the time? And you don't want Dwayne Haskins. But you have to take Dwayne Haskins and then make him work in the last year of your contract. You know, he was a dead man walking there. So, you know, Jerry Jones has been great, but he's also been the biggest drawback, the negative for the Cowboys, because Jerry, the owner, is pretty good. Jerry, the GM, is not good or hasn't been good. You know, they lucked into Dak Prescott. They wanted Connor Cook out of Michigan State. And he went to the Raiders. They took Dak Prescott. So, all right, I'll give you sort of a little bit of credit. You did some homework on him. But, you know, Jerry usually, when he does something, he wanted Johnny Manziel. They were going to take Johnny Manziel first round a couple years ago. And that's Jerry the GM. So when you have these owners, they can make money, but they don't make, you know, good choices when it comes to do I get involved and how much do I get involved. You know, the Giants owners don't get involved. The Steelers owners don't get involved. For the most part, with the Patriots, you know, you're not getting involved. You're letting the people do the job. And I think if you look down through history, those teams have been successful as a result.
Yeah. Do you have thoughts on what you'd like the new name to be? I don't know if you got it. I sent a link to an NBC Sports Washington, the latest mock-up of a Washington Red Wolves. It has sort of a paw print on the helmet with the Capitol Dome in the middle. But Red Wolves, or I was thinking maybe the Hogs, you know, you go back to the old Joe Bugle line. What do you think?
Well, I kept thinking from the beginning, if I'm Dan Snyder, first of all, I'd have no problem. I'd go kicking and screaming to give you the optics of I'm not happy about this. But privately, as a businessman, I'm going, a whole new stream of revenue. I got more merchandise now. And what I would have done, and maybe he'll do this, is I would have kept the script R, and I would have had whatever your nickname's going to be, have it start with an R. So you still keep that iconic-looking helmet and that, you know, script R. And then whatever you call it after that, I'm fine with. But that would have been my kind of business plan going in.
Yeah, and you keep the burgundy and gold, so you don't have to change any of that. The fans still have the, you know, the good memories, but then they can move on to the new era.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, you're going Peacock. You're back. You know, you went into the NBC fold when you went with the Football Night in America. You know, memories of that run you had there, doing a couple Super Bowls and the like.
It was great. I've done a lot of things. I've been very fortunate, but hosting that first Super Bowl in Tampa, you had the Steelers and the Cardinals, and you had the Cardinals maybe winning the Super Bowl, and Ben Roethlisberger leads the Steelers down the 2-minute drive, and you know Santonio Holmes.
And he Kurt Warner hit Larry Fitzgerald too right before that.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah. And you had the play at the end of the first half. Like there were just so many plays, and I was going to hand out the Super Bowl trophy, and the game ends, then it hits you. You're handing out the Super Bowl trophy, and by rough estimates, you have 100 million people who are watching you. And you're basically trying to do it so they don't know that you did it. You just don't want to screw up. And I remember Joe Namath was walking up with the trophy, and the players were touching it. I got the commissioner on my left. I got the owner of the Steelers. I got Roethlisberger next to me. I got Mike Tomlin. Like, you're just – then it hits you. I'm a kid from a small town in Ohio, and I'm ready to hand out the Super Bowl trophy. And the coolest part is I didn't tell anybody in my family that I was going to do it. So they're tuning in, watching it, and then realizing I'm handing out the Super Bowl trophy. And it's probably the best moment I ever had, just because who gets an opportunity to do that? And I got a chance to do it 4 times, and I never took it for granted. You know, it was always just try to do it and not screw up. And, you know, hopefully I was able to do that.
Oh, you definitely did. Now, well, I'd be remiss before we run if I don't at least ask one memory of, you know, SportsCenter. Most of us grew up watching you on that. How do you think working with guys like Stuart Scott and Rich Eisen and the whole long list, how do you think that made you better so that by the time you got to Football Night in America, by the time you got to Dan Patrick Show and Peacock, you are the seasoned vet you are?
Well, I think there was so much competition there. That's what people don't understand. It was very, very competitive, because each show thought they were better than the other shows. So the 6 o'clock with Charlie Steiner, Robin Roberts, and Bob Lee, they thought they were better than us. And then Stuart Scott and Rich Eisen thought they were better than myself and Keith Olbermann. When we called ourselves the Big Show, we did that to mock ourselves. We didn't know who was watching. So we would just say, welcome to the Big Show. And then you had the other shows that wanted to have a name. Like, it was just really, really competitive. So you wanted to put up a good show every single night. There's not one time where I went, you know what? I'm not into it. It was every night was the Super Bowl. It just felt like you got to be great. And I had great respect for, you know, the guys that I work with. But, you know, we went, Olbermann and I went through a 5-year period where we would take on anybody. I'd match those shows with anybody with what we did and how we did it. Because at the time, you have to understand, management didn't embrace us. Management fought us all the way. Now they want you to be that way. You know, and it's hard to find talent nowadays. But back then, Keith and I would do a show where we didn't know if we were going to get yelled at the next day. And we would actually have inside jokes where we'd make fun of our bosses on the air. Some of the things that they would say to us in the office, we might use that as a catchphrase later on that night. Like, we were really tiptoeing around management. Now, they took credit for us when we became successful, but they fought us and, you know, at one time threatened us, you know, with our jobs. So that made it great. It was live TV. There was no net. And there was so much fun in that because you got on the air and you can go. And that made me, I was able to adapt to any situation after doing that. You do 200 some shows a year, live TV at 11 o'clock at night. And you're able to kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel. You're ready for anything that, you know, is going to come your way in this business.
Yeah. All right. Well, you've been more than generous with your time. So thanks so much. Final question before we go. I am our entertainment editor and our movie critic here. So I got to ask you, what is your favorite either sports movie or just movie in general?
I thought you were going to ask me my favorite Sandler movie that I've been involved in.
Well, that too.
Because it's been, I think, 17 movies. I would probably do the Just Go With It, where it's Jennifer Aniston, Nicole Kidman, Dave Matthews, and myself, and I'm a nightclub owner, and my scene is a dance contest. And that's where you realize Kidman and Aniston, those are real stars. Like, I'm around Sandler. I'm friends with Sandler for a long time. You're standing next to Aniston and Kidman, then it kind of hits you like, boy, what am I doing? And they look at you as if they think you're an actor. They don't know I'm just a friend of Sandler's, that he puts me in a movie just because he gets a kick out of it. Aniston and Kidman are actually going, I don't know if this guy's any good. And I was just trying to get that scene done before they found out that I had no idea what I was doing.
Right. But do you have a favorite sports movie, though?
Probably Bull Durham. I love the feel of it. I think Susan Sarandon was brilliant and deserved an Academy Award. I thought she was wonderful in what she did in that role. Costner was Costner. And then Tim Robbins playing Nuke LaLoosh. They did a really good job with it. And I, no matter where it is in the movie, when I tune in, I stay with it just because I'm so familiar with it. It just feels, it's like a nice bathrobe or something. You just go, this is good. I know what's going to happen, and I still want to watch it.
Yeah, well, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, and sometimes it rains, and sometimes there are cardboard cutouts in the stands.
You went full circle on me.
Exactly.
Well done.
But, so, everybody, again, Dan Patrick is on Peacock starting next week, weekdays, 9 a.m. to noon. Hey, thanks so much for taking the time to join us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jace. Good luck.